So good morning. Thank you a lot for coming. Thank you, the organizers, for inviting me here. I will talk about... I'm Maria Botmediano from Madrid, the National Research Council. I have been lucky enough to... Oh, no, 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 no. Lucky enough, okay. Let me see. If it doesn't work, then I will do it by hand, no? Okay, to have these colleagues from a high energy group or high energy dispersed all over the world, and then these previous students and all this collection of people that studied with me and let me learn most of the things I am going to tell you about. Well, what I'm going to tell you about, sorry, oh my God, this is a real spoiler. Okay, let's start again. Now, what is a vile semimetal? What are vile fermions? The minute Dirac set his equation, a vile came and said, oh, if you have, you know, Dirac, 3 plus 1, four, it's a 4 by 4 matrix. Vile noticed that if you are massless, if there is no mass in the system, then the Dirac equation would split into two well-defined equations made of two-dimensional spinors. Those are the Vile spinors. Why is important to be in 3 plus 1 is because there it exists the chirality operator that does not exist, for instance, in 2 plus 1. And those Vile spinors are eigenstates of the chirality operator. So they are two-dimensional spinors of a well-defined chirality, handedness, so, and of course, well-defined helicity. High-energy people immediately noticed that there were no Vile fermions in elementary particles. They cannot care less because there are people that like physics, so they don't care so much about reality. So they set up an experimental way to see the properties of these particles that they listed them all. And the natural labs for them are the quark gluon plasma, which is something that forms when you splash two heavy ions for fractions of a second. The temperature is so high and the energy is so high that all the massive particles like quarks, mostly and electrons, behave as massless. And of course, the early universe is the other lab they can use. Hard times for them. What are Vile fermions in condensed matter? As you all know, those are band crossings in 3D crystals that, by chance, have the Fermi energy close to those band crossings. Band crossings are ubiquitous, so if you do a low energy expansion around those band crossings, what you get effectively is a description of a Hamiltonian that is a Vile Hamiltonian. The minute, as I told you, that the Vile equation was induced, then a lot of properties of Vile particles were set up. And one very important property that is affecting all the physics that we're doing is the chiral anomaly. So I'll remind you what is an anomaly. I remind you that this Emmy Noether set a very important theorem saying that when a classical action can be mechanics or, you know, classical mechanics, quantum field theory, any action, has a symmetry, then there will be a conserved current and a conserved charge. You all remember from the BA that translations in space give rise to linear momentum conservation, time, energy, rotation, angular momentum. This translation, this time and space mix up very nicely in relativity as the conservation of the energy momentum tensor when you are covariant. And all this is classic. Now you can ask, where does the conservation of electric charge come from? The conservation of electric charge comes from an internal symmetry of charged Hamiltonians or Lagrangian actions. An internal symmetry, which is, as you know, a gauge rotation of the wave function. So what is an anomaly? An anomaly is what happens when the classical action has a symmetry and hence a conserved current and charge, and it is spoiled when you quantize. This is what is called an anomaly. So an anomaly is the non-conservation of a quantum current that is conserved at the classical level. The most famous or the most important for us of the anomalies is the current anomaly. I told you that the four-dimensional fermions split into two-dimensional left and right Weyl fermions. Classically, left and right number of particles or left and right charges are conserved. But you see that when you try to quantize the system, when you go to a quantum level, in the presence of an external electromagnetic field, then you can define the sum of the left and right with current, which will be the normal electric current, and the difference that will be the what we call axial current. And then you see that both cannot be conserved. You have to choose. And of course, we choose to conserve electric charge at the price that axial charge is not conserved. The divergence of the divergence of the axial current that was zero before, now it will be proportional to E dot B, the product of electric and magnetic field. So this will be visible when you set a parallel electric and magnetic field. A very important aspect that will go all through the through all these concepts that I will discuss here is a very important difference between classical electrons, p square over 2m, and Dirac electrons, sigma dot k, is the behavior in magnetic field. As you know, when you put an external magnetic field in 3D, say in the kc direction, then in a non-relativistic system, the spectrum will be split into lambda levels that will have these energies. So, this is the cyclotron frequency, and this is a picture of how the energy as a function of kz, which is the only one that the spaces looks like. As you see, when you put n equals zero, there is nothing here. Now, if you are Dirac, and you work out the same exercise of the Landau levels, then you see that the Landau levels are similar as those in the non-relativistic case. They degenerate when they are n different from zero, but there is a chiral zero mode, a zero Landau level that has a well-defined chirality depending on the direction of the magnetic field and the chirality of the Weyl node. Okay, this is a key issue in our everything that I will discuss before in what follows. And as a spoiler, this structure and the consequences, the physical consequences of this zero Landau level will also occur when you have fictitious magnetic fields. That's something that I'm going to discuss a little bit also. So the physical consequences of the chiral anomaly in particular were set up by this Nielsen and Minamiya in the 83, putting Weyl fermions on the lattice. First, they had a theorem saying the Weyl fermions have to come in pairs of opposite chiralities, so the sum of all the chiralities is zero. This we see in the experiments. And then they just say that, okay, you put a magnetic field, you project into Landau levels, now you switch on an electric field that will shift the spectrum of the zero Landau level, say, to the right. And then the net result is that charge will be pumped from left to right. And this is the non-conservation of the axial charge. The B comes because of the density of states of the Landau zero mode. So, by the way, sorry, I guess people will discuss that. I think that there is no doubt now that this chiral anomaly has been observed in the Weyl semimetals, but probably this will be also discussed along the talk. Anyway, there is a very, very interesting discussion of all the effects that can mask the chiral anomaly by Young and here in the KITP, so I advise you, if you are interested in knowing the experimental situation, to go to this. Now, once you have Kyra people, there are other anomaly-related transport that were set up in the quark gluon plasma. Particularly important is the current magnetic effect, which is the production of a current, electric current, in the direction of an external magnetic field when there is an imbalance between left and right charges. This apparently has been observed in zirconium pentatelluride, which is amazing. But there is something also very interesting, which is an axial magnetic effect. That is, assume that there would be a B5 field, means a magnetic field that would couple opposite to the two chiralities. Then there would be a current, an energy current, proportional to the chemical potential, both. But if you don't, even if you don't have an imbalance, in the presence of a B5, there would be an energy current along the magnetic field. Then there is also a current along the axis of a rotation, if you rotate the material, that has not been observed yet, neither in the quark gluon plasma nor in the materials. And there is the chiral separation effect, also very interesting, that says that in the presence of a normal magnetic field, say, there will be an accumulation of chiral charge in the direction of the magnetic field. This is nothing but that a B, a separation, will be produced if you start with a normal Dirac semimetal and you add a magnetic field. So the question is, can we perhaps realize those anomalies, anomaly-related transport in the vile semimetals? A very interesting aspect of this transport is that it is very often dissipationless. So there are currents, like the Hall current, that will not induce an increase in entropy. So one question is, pity, there are no axial gauge fields in particle physics. Can we do better? The answer is yes. And first, let me tell you that, as I tell you, high energy people do not care if things exist or not. If there is something interesting, they will study it. And then they studied also the effect of chiral magnetic fields that did not exist in particle physics. And they saw, for instance, that there would be a contribution to the chiral anomaly proportional to the E dot B5. Should a E dot B, a E B5 exist? So what we see when we study the vile semimetals is that this is the Hamiltonian, right? 2 by 2, and this is the chirality plus or minus, and that's the opposite chirality. And this B vector is the separation between the vile nodes. The previous talk, Chaim told us that now there are well-established magnetic vile semimetals, meaning that this B is a reality. And if you put together, if you construct with this Hamiltonian a Lagrangian, which is a trivial thing to do, then you immediately see that this little B, the separation between the vile nodes, will couple in the Lagrangian exactly in the form of an axial gauge field. Right? It's like an electromagnetic field, but it has a gamma 5, meaning a sign, in front of it. So here they are. Here we have an axial gauge field. A digression that is important for people that know graphene is the following. We have seen in graphene all the time that we had two vile points separated in momentum space, and nobody ever cared about this separation. We didn't see any physical result or a consequence of this separation. Why here we do see that? Why here we observe things that are proportional to this B? The reason is the chiral anomaly. If you have a constant gauge field, electromagnetic field, you gauge it away. You rotate the fermions and the field disappears. If you have an axial gauge field, 3 plus 1, remember, you rotate it away, it disappears from the, say, fermion Lagrangian, but it will appear in the electromagnetic sector in the form of a kind of a theta term. So a rotation, a pure gauge field, a constant axial vector, cannot be gauged away. It has physical consequences. It is a physical parameter of the material. So here we have this parameter, wonderful. Now, we would like it to be a field, meaning we would like it to depend on space and time and to do physics with it. So we know that the question is, how can we alter or make dynamics into this separation? Well, in the previous talk, we have seen a little bit that this separation can be manipulated. Well, they manipulated the Fermi arcs, but and there are three ways in which you can make this be dynamic. One is elastic deformations of the lattice that I will tell you more about. The second is boundaries, I'll tell you a little bit, and then non-uniform magnetization. This hidden here thing is CDTOC by Ronnie Elan sitting here, that probably we will expand about this aspect. And here is a review that you don't see also, the reference, but it's a review done by Ronnie and Grush in there and other people collecting all these aspects. So what can we do with the boundary? There is a very simple observation, is the B field, B5 vector is never constant. Why? Because samples are finite. So this B field will be something inside the sample and zero outside. So at the boundaries of the sample, there will be a step. And that will create a delta field magnetic field, a singular magnetic field at the boundary. We realize that, oh my God, again, well, the reference is missing, but this is Grushin, Landsteiner, and myself, and Cortijo, that saw, and very important, Maxime Chernodou, that saw that just because the little b is a theta at the surface, there would be a big a magnetic field running, say, in a side cylinder, at the surface that could induce an axial magnetic effect that I described for you before. So an energy current parallel to this magnetic field without doing anything to the sample, right? So a very important aspect of it, of this axial magnetic effect, it does, the conductivity has a contribution coming from the gravitational anomaly that is proportional to T squared. So what we suggested it was that you change the temperature, you will see the cylinder rotate faster or slower, and that would be a test of the gravitational anomaly. And this is, I think this is a very nice paper that is from 2014 and is hidden here in my transparencies. So from strain, to make it fast, say that you want to construct, you have this action where you had the B field here first, and now you want to construct an effective coupling of electron-phonon coupling. So with an effective action idea saying that, give me the ingredients that I have, and with those I will form scalars or I will form terms that have all the symmetries of my lattice. So the first thing you see is that with this B field that Haim provided for us, you can immediately contract with the deformation tensor of the elasticity. So what I'm doing is deforming the lattice, the ion lattice, and seeing how this deformation couples to the electronic density. And a term that immediately you can immediately write is a term of the form vector field coupled, since it comes with the B field, it will be axial, and it will couple to the Hamiltonian exactly as a dynamical axial vector field. So we the symmetry approach was done here. The first derivation was here in this elastic gauge fields in bisemi-metals. And after that, a lot of bisemi-metal spintronics, meaning consequences of having axial, real axial gauge fields and axial magnetic fields have appeared. There is a lot more here that you don't see. But the interesting thing is that really, you see Landau levels, you see everything with strain deformations, with lattice deformations. Now, experimental evidence, amazing. Well, we have seen that in graphene. We saw in graphene that that Landau levels formed with deformations. So now apparently they start to see it in bisemi metals. I guess more experiments will come, and this is a very fascinating thing. So what shall we? Oh, okay, now and now for something not completely different. It looks different, but it is not. So my talk was called chiral waves in bisemi metals, and then I will first tell you that the hydro aspects of Dirac matter are emerging. Well, they emerged in graphene before, as usual, as Marco Pollini will be here and Andy Lucas. They probably will expand about that, and there is also Claudio Felser will be here and will possibly tell us about the hydro aspects of all these electronic fluids, right? So what I want to emphasize is the fact that in the quark-gluon plasma, which is really a fluid, is a real plasma, apart from this list of anomaly-related responses that I showed you before, it appeared something very intriguing and interesting, which was the chiral magnetic wave that was by Dima Karsiev and Ho-Ung-Chi, which showed that conveying the chiral magnetic effect and the chiral separation effect, they could establish two wave equations for the vector density and for the axial density. So the result of that is, in the presence of a magnetic field, chiral density waves will form that but propagate in a longitudinal way, and they are in the chiral magnetic wave, it propagates in the direction of the magnetic field, those waves will hybridize. So the axial waves will hybridize with standard charge density waves, say. Now, these chiral magnetic waves have been also much searched for in the quark-gluon plasma. There is these preliminary results, and apparently in January we will get more results about this. But there have been a recent article saying that this chiral magnetic wave, because of being hybridized with the plasmons, would die immediately, would have a very strong, will be overdumped. So the question is, how can do we it better? And obviously I gave you all the ingredients to know what I'm going to do now. What I'm going to do is what I always do, trade the B by the axial B and see what happens, right? So, sorry. No, it's okay. Never mind. So, chiral sound wave. Perfect. As I told you, I can, engineer strain in a bisemi metal so as to produce a vector potential. And with this vector potential, if I engineer it correctly, I can get an axial magnetic field. So if you get in a rod of a bisemi metal, you do a torsion, then you will get an axial magnetic field along the axis of the rod. And then combining the chiral anomaly with the chiral magnetic effect that is now of the form mu 5 b 5, you immediately will get a chiral wave. So you get an equation of this type for the density of chiral charge, which has the property that it propagates only in one direction along the magnetic field and no backwards, right? This is we call it the chiral sound wave. Is not in the reference, but it doesn't matter. It was done with Maxim Chernotub. And there are two suggestions for measuring this sound. One is it mixes with the standard acoustic phonons. So you can see that since it propagates only in one direction, if you excite phonons along the road, the phonons going in one direction and going backwards that were had the same dispersions before, after you twist, will have different dispersions. So measuring the different velocities, you could get a hint of this chiral magnetic wave. But even, well, more recently, meaning this morning, I got results from some colleagues that are here written and you cannot see, sorry, which have seen, we are in a very preliminary result, seeing that the specific heat of the Weyl-Semi metal will have a dependency of the with the temperature, which will be proportional to T due to this chiral wave, which is a very, very precise signature of it. So now, other very interesting new developments around about sound without any axial thing is this CDI, hear the sound of bifrenness, a very ingenious way to avoid the hybridization of the chiral wave with the electromagnetic wave. This is something probably Ronnie will talk about. This is an acoustic Weyl system, so you do see all the effects that I told you in magnons, in phonons, in photons. So if you have Weyl magnons, Weyl phonons, Weyl whatever, you will see these physics. You deform the lattice, you get axial cage fields, you see lambda levels, you see everything. So of course, artificial lattices are the best lab, and also, you know, these cold atoms, I mean, these lasers and optical lattices. So with this, I have a first summary, which is with Weyl crystals, you get through quantum field theory and effective actions, you get anomalies. With the anomalies, you get new transport phenomena. With boundaries or whatever, you combining with elasticity, you get axial gauge fields. And in a hydro approach, you get chiral waves. So the big picture is that Dirac matter is now making a grand unification of many different areas of physics, because we are seeing condensed matter, which was already unifying solid state, so-called solid state and statistical physics, quantum field theory, that was the area of particle physics, plasma, elasticity, relativity I didn't talk about, but these deformations can induce a metric and can induce you know, quantum field theory in curved space, I didn't mention, but this is something that is also going on. And finally, string theory people, the holography part of them, are very interested in this ADS condensed matter theory correspondence. So I thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you for this very stimulating talk. So there are a number of questions.
So on this chiral sound wave, usually, you know, most prominently the example of the quantum Hall effect, when you have a chiral mode on one edge, you have another, a counter-propagating chiral mode on the other edge. Now here you have a chiral mode going only in one direction, and there's no way for the energy to come back?
Yeah, very good question. So I didn't mention, but this B5 field will go in one direction in the bulk of the road, and will be in the there will be a distribution of B5 in the opposite direction in the boundary. So what I've been describing is just the bulk effect, but you're completely right.
And so it's not a chiral mode; it's a pair of counter-propagating modes, one in the inside and the other one in the outside.
Yeah, there will be a chiral sound wave opposite in the boundary. Okay. Right.
That makes sense.
You're right.
Thank you for very a nice and inspiring talk. I would like to ask about the scale of these torsions which you need to apply to this to your system, because usually this elasticity is associated with a continuous theory in which all the stresses and strains are extremely small. So how can we reach this regime, and are they realizable?
Yeah, thank you. A good question also. So we have the experience of graphene, where which is an extremely singular elastic material that can be deformed up to 1 or even more, 5%, elastically coming back to the same. So the two ways to realize this elasticity in vial semimetals would be, one, using the properties of the materials that very often are layer materials that we have heard about. So for instance, zirconium pentatellurite, it comes naturally like in needles, and those needles can be twisted up to, you know, by 180 degrees, we have been told, elastically, it will, they will come back. Or now they are building thin films of vial semimetals, which will also be deformable. Of course, all these elastic effects are very tiny, very small. So the idea is that you should look for something that wouldn't exist otherwise. So you subtract all the background and you get it. Now, what kind of magnetic fields, effective magnetic fields, are you getting? We saw in graphene something like 300 Tesla. This is, to me, quite overdoing it. So in vial semimetals, 1 Tesla can easily be achieved. And this is discussed very nicely in a paper by Piculin and Marcel Franz, which was were the first to see the potential of these gauge fields that we set up, and start to analyze all the things that can happen. So they have a good estimation. So 0.3, 0.5 Tesla is a reasonable thing to achieve. I'm sorry, maybe I can go to the experimental paper that I showed you. Here. They see like 3 Tesla, and this is an experiment. So they observe with STM along the corrugated side of the sample, they observe the Landau levels, and they, by the separation of the Landau levels, they estimate a pseudo-magnetic field of the order of 3 Tesla, and this is experimental. Although this paper is, I don't know, there has not been any other one. Of course, it's very early, so all these things are have two years old. So in graphene, it also took some time to establish this strangetronics that now is really verified by everybody. So I think that these things are accessible.
So there's a question by Andrei in the middle.
Maria, you've defined the chiral magnetic effect as the linear response of axial current to B5. So how should I think of so B5 being defined as this axial magnetic field that couples differently to left and right movers. So how do I think of making B5 a realistic experiment? So one option that you gave us is distortional with the cylinder. Is there any other way? Like looking at the slide, B5 is defined as curl of A5, but I don't have a physical intuition what A5 is. So can you tell us about, like, how do I actually engineer? Does it, you know, what is this A5 and how does it come out of strain?
Yeah. Okay, so for that, you have to think of, so A5 will be J. Well, J, B, I, no? This will be along a certain direction, right? So you have to contract the strain tensor with the B5. This is given by the material. Now the strain tensor, you manipulate it. So what is this strain tensor? It's DIUJ plus TJUI. This is the strain that you have to do. So you have to construct something that such that the curl of this A will be non-zero, constant or whatever. So U has to be quadratic in the coordinates, and it has to fulfill. It's very easy. It's a very nice exercise you can do. I mean, anybody can do it. And then that's the way the strain-tronics works. But I advise you to look at this Piculin-Franz paper, because it's very complete as telling you what will be the best strain engineering for getting whatever you want. So far, what you want is a constant B5, because that is what would provide lambda levels and everything, but you may want other things. I must also say that we learned all that from graphene. So we knew all that. It was really trivial to do invite semi-metals, basically. So the strain that works in graphene, you just put a third dimension, do nothing with it. This will produce a B5 constant. So.
So, sorry, you might have mentioned that I missed it. What is the physical picture of the chiral? Is it an inter-vial mode?
Sorry, what?
The chiral? What's the physical picture of this collective mode? Is it
the chiral sound?
Yes,
mode?
The chiral sound.
Is this it an inter-vial chiral sound mode? Yeah. Is a longitudinal chiral density wave. So it's a rho 5.
What's its operator?
Ah, the second.
So I have two vial cones.
Yes.
It's got some operator, the collective mode with some form factor. What is it? I take one particle from one node and put it in the other. What's the collective mode has to have some creation operator.
This is.
Yes.
So it's like a.
Yes.
No, this is really a chiral density wave. So it's a wave of density of rho 5. Now, what is rho 5? Is rho left minus rho right.
Rho left minus.
So there will be, yeah, this is the density, the 5 density, the density of the axial current. So the difference between left and right will propagate along the road longitudinally with a velocity that is given by various parameters.
So if I'm in two dimensions and have whatever, Rauschbach coupling, right, at some time reversal invariant points. Would I have this mode?
At the time reversal invariant...
Right, any, say forget about, or even vials at time reversal invariant points, right? I can have vials at time reversal invariant points. Will I get this mode?
First you have to construct a B5. So in a time reversal invariant mode, you will not have a B5.
Well, B5 is just the pi.
Right? Yeah, B5 is constructed with little b, right? And little b will break time reversal. So.
Not if it's pi.
Sorry?
Not if it's pi, right?
Not if it's pi. Oh, you're confusing me with facts.
What I'm saying is put the vowel node at time reversal invariant points.
Okay.
Right, and there's whatever, four of them, or eight of them in three dimensions.
Okay.
And then you have the B momentum.
Right.
That's pi.
Right.
One
we haven't thought about that. Very good thing. We can work it out later and publish a paper together.
Okay. Yeah, hi. Thank you for the talk. So I have a question about the strain engineering ideas. So we know sort of from graphene, if you have ripples or some kind of non-uniformity, it can cause some randomness to this effective magnetic field.
Yeah.
And so have people thought about that in vial semi-metals, or is it a problem? Or
that would be exactly the same as in graphene. So normally a random strain will originate a random magnetic field, which probably will be hard to measure any effect. But as you know from graphene, you can locally obtain a high uniform magnetic field, as happened in this chromie sample with triangles, remember, this 300 tesla. There was in a surface big enough as to go with the STM and make experiments with this. So in the vial semi-metals, it will be the same. You cannot avoid the strain, so this will be like a noise behind. But if you engineer a special strain, that will be able to, as I say, the example of the road is very good, because there you will have really a constant magnetic field B5 along the road. And this has very neat consequences. And on top of it, there can be other deformations, and there will be noise, of course.
Okay, well, I had a couple of questions for me. So, as far as I understand, so this axial anomaly is a property of low energy theory. So, if you look at the lattice model, you don't have it, right? So, it's a low energy physics. So, which means it's large distances. So, if you have some defects or something happening at small distances, such as your imperfections, is it even correct to talk about chiral anomaly? If you just look at the lattice model and do this calculation, do you need this language at all?
Okay.
Yeah, that's my question.
Okay, good question. It has two parts.
Yeah.
What I think. First is the anomaly is a low. It's a defective field theory of very low energy will have the anomaly, right?
Right.
And if you take the whole band structure, maybe you lose. But see the Nielsen and Amiya implementation. The way they explained the anomaly was put the quantum field theory in a lattice. And there, the difference is that you wouldn't call it anomaly, because then what happens is the charge is pumped from left to right. So no mystery, no nothing. If you have infinite cones, as in quantum field theory, then it's like, what is going on? You have to invoke the ultraviolet cutoff, so high energy physics, in order to explain or to do this spectral flow. Mm-hmm. So, no anomaly, I wouldn't say no anomaly, I would say a very simple explanation of the anomaly in the lattice, because we will call anomaly when there is a current at the classical level that is not conserved at the quantum level, and it still happens in the lattice. The second question is, disorder, perturbation of all kinds, the anomaly will be robust to that. It is this is a coefficient that is clean and is not affected. If you do the quantum field theory calculations, you see that there are no quantum corrections, interactions will not change it, it's not affected by the disorder, so.
Yeah, and, okay, so and actually, so also another question. So as far as I understand, so this gauge fields you're talking about, they're kind of classical fields, they're not fluctuating, right? So, if you just consider phonons themselves, just phonons, so you can take a snapshot of your system, it will break all kinds of symmetry. So can you just think about phonons as producing dynamic version of these fields?
Yes.
Because they do fluctuate.
Yeah, of course. Those are a kind of phonons, because you see, I constructed it with the UIJ, the string tensor standard, and the string tensor is the derivative of the deformation vector, and those are the phonons.
So, is this B5, does it have time dependence or it does not?
It may have. If you induce like, you shake the sample dynamically, then you will get, of course, a time dependent, which also gives rise to interesting things.
Okay. So maybe last question?
So very interesting talk. And for the chiral sound wave, you mentioned some preliminary results showing there's evidence for this chiral thermal transport. Can you explain to us what's the connection and which part supports the chiral thermal transport? Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, well, it's preliminary are the results, but the idea is quite obvious. It's like the moment you have an extra mode propagating into your sample, energy transport and heat will be affected. So that's mostly what happens. So you compute the density of states of the extra mode, you plug it into the specific heat, and then you see that the specific heat changes. That's it. So whenever you erase an extra mode, energy will notice that, right? So the chiral sound is just an extra mode that you excite in the system by twisting.
So thank you very much, both speakers. And we now have coffee break.